Awesome. Hey, look, thank you so much for joining us today. Microsoft released Windows 10 on the 29th of July last year. And in January, Microsoft announced that Windows 10 had been installed over 200 million times. My name's Daniel Bobiers. I'm a Microsoft MVP, and I'm practice lead for Datacom's Cloud Consult team. And first thing I want to do is thank everybody for attending the session today in person, and those people that are on the live webcast. Now, on the live webcast, people can be putting in questions in the chat window, and you'll have seen there's a bit of a syntax that they wanted you to use for that. For those people in the audience here, you don't have to send me chat sessions, but if you've got any questions, please let me know as we go along, and we'll have some time at the end to answer questions as well. So those people on the web stream, there's about half an hour at the end of this session where you can ask questions. So what I want to share with you today is how Windows 10 empowers greater productivity, allowing staff to get things done quickly, yet more securely than ever before. And when Microsoft started work on Windows 10, it spent time understanding how the way we work is changing. And they found that for many of us, work is no longer a location, and that mobility is the defining vector in the evolution of the business world. 56% of us send our first email before we get into the office for the day. 73% of us send our last email after we've left the office for the day. And it's not because we're working shorter hours, right? It's not because we're turning up at 11 o'clock in the morning and leaving at 3. Right? And we're doing this more and more from our own devices. Work is no longer a place, but a collection of experiences that follow us through the devices, apps, and data that are becoming ambient around us. So it's about the mobility of the experience. 37% of us work from three or more locations. And over 50% of us do this using three or more devices. And we're using more applications as well. 82% of us use more than 7 applications in our day-to-day job. As the experience moves, our data needs to move as well. So, with this in mind, Microsoft set forth to create a new Windows platform aligned to this new way that we're working. Windows 10 runs across a massive range of devices, from headless IoT hardware, phones, tablets, two-in-ones, laptops, PCs, up to the new Surface, and beyond into the world of holograms. This gives us one converged platform, one management paradigm, and one security model across all of our devices. For staff, it's a familiar and productive experience, regardless of the device that we're using. So that's kind of the setup. Let's jump into a bit of a demo and actually have a look through the Windows 10 UI. Now, I'm aware that there's a lot of people in the room that have used Windows 10, but we do have people on the webcast that haven't. And so we'll go through and just pull out some of these key features. So if I hit escape on my keyboard, I'm just going to drag a chair across. So the first thing I want to show is the start menu. Now, I think we're all familiar with Windows 8. Microsoft did some really radical things. And they got rid of the start button, and they changed quite dramatically the way that we access applications. And for a lot of staff, this was a really jarring experience. And you put people in front of a Windows 8 device, and they're quite confused as to what they needed to do. And what's this swiping in from the left-hand side of the screen and the right-hand side of the screen? Especially if I don't have a touch screen to be able to do that with, right? So Microsoft listened, and with Windows 10, the start button's back, and a more familiar experience. So on the left-hand side of our start menu, We have our more familiar recently used applications. And down the bottom here, we have our all applications. So we can click in and we can see all of the applications that we've got installed on our PC. On the right-hand side of the start menu, we get these live tiles from Windows 8. And I really like live tiles because they give me a snapshot of the information that I need without having to open the application up. Now, if I look at the weather app here, I haven't had to open the app to be able to see what the weather forecast is for the next couple of days. I can click on the app and I can see more information. But for that quick glance at that information, it's a really handy sort of little feature. And I can resize these tiles as well. Resize. And as I change the size, the information I get changes as well. It adapts to those different sizes. I can also turn off the live feature. If there's an app I don't want to see, I can disable it. So the start menu's really easy and familiar for staff. And I can also resize that start menu too. So I can show as many or as few tiles as I want to see for the way that I want to work. So the next thing I'd like to show you is the Action Center. Now we access the Action Center by clicking down here on the little notifications icon, but we can also hit it by going Windows A on our keyboard. For those of you that are used to Windows 8 and like swiping in from the right-hand side of the screen, we can swipe in and it will pop up as well. This is split into two parts. The top of the Action Center is our notification area. Now, Windows 8, Microsoft introduced these badges that pop up on the screen, and invariably you just noticed the badge as it was disappearing and you didn't quite know what it was trying to tell you. So those badges now go into this notification area, so we can click in and we can see that history of what it's been trying to tell us. Down the bottom here are our quick action keys. These are actions which are regular actions that staff might need to take on a device that Microsoft have made as quick and easy to get to as possible. You know, things like flight mode, our Wi-Fi. One of the things I like is quiet hours, turning off notifications after a certain time so it doesn't pop up and annoy me. And if I click into my all settings, with Windows 10, Microsoft have released a new settings control panel where they've brought together all of the standard settings that a staff member would change into this new nice clean interface. One of the things I really like is it's got full search. So if I go in here and type color, it's going to bring up all of the settings for changing my color. Now, the reason I've gone into color as an example, when Windows 10 was first released, it had a very clean white on gray color theme. And looks really nice, but staff that are used to running Windows 7 are used to the active window having a different color. And Microsoft heard that feedback. So in the November release of Windows, Microsoft have added an option here to show color on start, taskbar, and title bar. So if we turn that on, we'll see immediately my taskbar's changed. But now if I click on the weather application, that active window comes up with that same colorization. So again, for staff that are used to that Windows 7 feel, we can set these settings to make it a really easy experience moving across. Now I'm going to disable that because I actually quite like the new slightly lighter interface that Microsoft have set up. It's important to note as well that all of the shortcut keys and commands from Windows 7 and Windows 8 work on Windows 10. So if I do Alt-Tab, I can tab between my applications. With Windows 10, Microsoft have also introduced what they've called Task View. If I do Windows Tab, I get this exploded out view of the applications that are currently running on this virtual desktop. I say that carefully, this virtual desktop, because with Windows 10, Microsoft have introduced the concept of virtual desktops for grouping applications together. So what I use this for, and I find it really handy, when you've sort of got a workflow that you're working through, or for me, it's working on customer documents. If I'm doing a Visio and I've got a PowerPoint and I've got a Word document, I'll group those windows into their own virtual desktop. And then when I'm working away on those, one, I'm not so distracted by you know, Skype popping up and my business emails popping up. But also I know that when I'm copying and pasting between those applications, my context is only in that customer's data. I'm not worrying about pasting things into the wrong place. And as I go through this demo, I hope I'll show you how I'm using those virtual desktops to provide that separation. Now, it's really easy to move applications between virtual desktops. If I grab the weather app, for instance, I can just drop it down onto that virtual desktop. If I hold my mouse over and just hover, I can see the applications that I have running on my different virtual desktops. And it's also really easy to switch between using shortcut keys. If I go Control Windows and then the arrow key, I can easily flick between those desktops. Now, my son really likes that keyboard combination because he likes playing Minecraft on Windows 10. And I was in the kitchen the other day, and I can hear Minecraft music, but he's supposed to be doing his assignment. I'd let him use my PC as well. Came back into the room and I saw the screen flicker, and there's his assignment, but he's not really progressed far beyond where he was. Leave the room, Minecraft music starts again. Sure enough, he'd started Minecraft up on a different virtual desktop, and we've got the keyboard commands. But the joke was on him, because there's another keyboard command very similar, which rotates the screen around. And the third time I came into the room, he managed to rotate the screen around so that Minecraft was showing upside down on the screen, and he couldn't get out of that at all. So he had to fess up to me that he wasn't doing his homework. So let's swap across to this the desktop that I've got here. I think we're all familiar with snapping windows in Windows 7. If I push this up to the top of the screen, it's going to go out into full screen mode, right? And if I grab this and I put it onto the right-hand side of the screen, it's going to snap to the right-hand side. But Windows 10 is a bit smarter. It says, well, if you've snapped a window to the right-hand side of the screen, you're probably wanting to open something up on the left-hand side as well. So it's going to prompt me and say, well, what application do you want to display on the left-hand side of the screen? So I'll click on the World Clock application. That's going to pop up straight away from me. Now, because these are both universal applications, I'm not restricted to just having a middle split with that screen. Those two applications now snap together, and I can change that divide as far across as I want. Now, certain applications will get to a point where they'll go, actually, no, can't let you squish it up any further than that. But it just makes it easier, again, for laying out those screens and for setting it up the way you want to be running it. I'm also not limited to just two applications. If my resolution's high enough, I can do a four-way split of the screen. So again, I can add another application in and it will snap that in there. Now there's keyboard shortcuts I've been using here as well, the Windows key and the arrow keys to do this, but it's just as easy to do using the mouse and keyboard as well. I've got Edge up on the screen here. One of the things that Microsoft updated with Edge in the November update is we now get these thumbnail views. And if you've got lots of windows open, it's really handy to be able to look through and find that thumbnail, that tab that you need to get access to. These are also all universal applications. Now, Microsoft introduced universal apps with Windows 8, and the experience was interesting because you had this application that you could run on a phone and on your desktop, which was great, but they kind of existed outside of the space of our desktop and would open up a universal app and it would open in a completely different screen. And you go, well, that's a bit useless because I want to be able to have that open and I want to be able to see other stuff. I've lost that desktop. Where's it gone? So with Windows 8.1, Microsoft allowed us to have universal apps on our desktop, but we still couldn't interact with those applications easily. They didn't feel or look the same as our normal desktop applications. So with Windows 10, good news is universal applications look and feel just like a normal desktop application. All of the same things that we're used to doing with them, with a normal desktop app, we can do with a universal application. One of the things that universal apps are really good at is they adjust themselves to the capabilities of the device that they're running on. And the alarms and clock apps are a really great example. You see here, as I increase the size of the screen, the layout changes. Because this app is designed to run on a phone as well, it goes, what's the best layout when I start getting smaller? It doesn't try and squish everything up, or it doesn't mean I've got to scroll along. Microsoft has put some thought into it and gone, how can I lay the screen out better as the screen real estate becomes smaller? And we see that with a lot of Microsoft's applications. So far, I've shown you everything in this demo using a high precision mouse pointer. But what about if I'm using a slightly less precise, reasonably stubby finger? Because it changes things, right? So I'm not lucky enough to have one of those really nice looking devices that they showed earlier. I might steal one on the way out. But what I can do with this device is I can put it into tablet mode. So a couple of things just happened then, right? All of my icons have disappeared from my taskbar, and my application's gone into full screen mode straight away. And when I click on my start menu has now gone into full screen mode. So Microsoft, the operating system has adjusted itself to be easy to use with these slightly less precise pointers that I've got attached to me. And everything sort of spaces itself out. In this mode, it's more designed for consuming information than doing a lot of entering of information. Now, in saying that, I can still do those same activities. If I grab this application, if I swipe down from the top of my screen and push it across the left-hand side, it's going to pop up and it's going to say, well, what would you like to open on the right-hand side of your screen? And I can still get those same split-screen views and everything else. So the experience is similar, but it's optimized for the tools I have at my disposal to be able to use that device. Now, I'm going to invite Regan to come up on stage, because Regan has an engineering model of the very latest Microsoft phone, and he's going to show us how actually the phone looks exactly the same as the PC now.
So this is a Microsoft Lumia 950 phone. There's a 950 and there's also an XL version, which is a little bit bigger. These are one of the latest phones that we've got. They're running Windows 10. This is running a pre-release version of Windows 10. But there are these phones out in the market running the correct version of Windows 10, which does have the features I'm about to show you. So I know Jordana earlier said she loves Hello. Some of you may or may not know what that is. Daniel said that we've got Windows 10 across different devices. The first thing I'm going to do here is start by logging on to this machine with Windows Hello, this phone. So if you have a look at the screen, hopefully you'll see my phone. It says it's looking for me. So when I get close enough and look at it with my eyes, it's recognized me with the camera and it's logged me straight on. So in that case there, I didn't have to put in a PIN, I didn't have to type in a password. It uses some biometrics, some fancy infrared camera and some rest of the stuff. It sees me and it just puts me straight onto the phone. Now Daniel showed you the alarms and clock application before. This is an app that I really love. So here's that same one running on this phone here. As you can see, it's basically looks the same as what it did when Daniel had it on the big screen, when he shrunk it down to be about the same form factor as the phone. So this is the concept that we call Continuum, where we build these applications. And they scale to fit the size and the screen of the device that you're currently using on. So if you are moving between Windows 10 on a PC, Windows 10 on a phone, that's really good and really quite useful. While we're on the phone, Daniel asked me to show you something called Cortana as well, and that running on the phone. So I'm just going to hit my search button on the phone. It's going to pop up Cortana. And straight away what you're going to see is it's going to surface some information that it knows about me. Basically, you let Cortana opt in to look at your calendar, track some information about you, and then it becomes your personal assistant. And what you can see on the screen here is it's showing me what's on my calendar coming up straight away. It also tells me that I've got a flight that it's tracking that's leaving in 5 hours and 7 minutes, which is pretty cool. And we can tell Cortana to track a lot of stuff. We can tell it to surface news and relevant news as well. So you've seen some news, and there's the weather that we saw on the desktop PC. So as well. There's a lot of other really cool stuff that you can do with Cortana. One of the things that I'm just going to show, and hopefully the sound and everything will work as well, is okay, Cortana. Oops. let's start that again. Cortana, where's the nearest supermarket? So the sound is not working for some reason, but it did come up and show me some of the nearest supermarkets. So you can see it's pointed them, it's drawn them on the map, and then I can just click on one and it'll bring it up and tell me a little bit more about that, and even give me some directions and then transfer me into the map as well. Still haven't got any sound? No, we haven't. Okay. Right. She talks quite nicely to you and says, where would you like to go and some other things as well, but we can't show that from the technical thing. But we were talking about Continuum before. We were talking about seeing that Alarms and Clock app running on the phone. We saw it running on the Windows desktop, and it was basically the same app. We can also see the calendar running, and it's the same app as well. When I rotate the screen on the phone, you'll see it takes on a different view because it knows that it's a different orientation screen layout. So now I can see a week view. Once again, the same as what we do on the PC. But there's one more really cool thing that we can do around Continuum with the phone. So what I'm going to do now is I'm actually going to take my phone off of here and swap it to something else, which is called a Continuum display dock. And I'm just going to hold that up in the air. It's a little box that you can buy, and you can plug your phone into it. And that basically lets one of these phones connect to a full-size screen and use these applications and windows at their full screen size. Now, let me just...
I think this is brilliant, what Regan's about to show us. It's, I think for a long time we've talked about our mobile phones becoming our desktop, and we're actually... got something here which is very, very close to that, which is really rather cool. And so, I see I've got a lift to the airport now because Regan's going to the airport tonight, so it's excellent.
Okay, so now what we're seeing is this phone plugged into that dock, and you can see what looks like a normal Windows 10 kind of desktop with a few little changes. You'll notice the icons and things look a little bit different down there, but we do have a start menu. On my phone at the moment, you can also probably see, if you've got really good eyes, you can probably see all my tiles and everything. So what I can do is I can actually use a screen up there and the phone screen at the same time. What I can also do is tap on the phone and get a mouse pad up, and now I've got a touchpad, which, as you'll see my cursor moving around, I can use that as a mouse, and I can go and click on the start menu here, and now you're seeing my start menu. So just like the desktop, there's the weather tile showing what the weather currently is. And once again, there's that alarms and clock application. I'm just going to launch this. And this looks now not what you saw on the phone screen before, but this is now exactly what you saw when you were looking at it on the PC screen. Daniel, just saying before, the phone ultimate desktop potential replacement. You can also run the remote desktop client on this phone connected to a screen. And then work off of a remote terminal server to do your full work. So you don't even necessarily need a laptop in that case.
Can you plug a mouse and keyboard into the little box?
Very good question. The question was, can you plug a mouse and keyboard into the box? With some luck, this keyboard and mouse here will actually... Oh, look, here we go. So now I'm using the mouse and a wireless keyboard, which is plugged in. It's a USB key, a USB thing on the back of their box. Here's my keyboard. I can do things like Alt Tab between my applications, start up an application, use my mouse to get there, and then use the keyboard to type in. So basically, exactly as though you were using your mouse and keyboard in your computer. Maybe you don't take your computer home. Maybe you just plug your phone into a mouse and keyboard and go right from there.
So far, Finn's not been able to log in as me, but he does try quite often. Now, Microsoft Passport works with Windows Hello to secure our passwords using our biometric data. And with the November update to Windows 10, we can now use Windows Hello with our domain accounts as well. And again, we can build Windows Hello support into our enterprise applications. So our enterprise application can trigger Windows Hello and trigger that biometric-based login for that application. It makes a really incredibly secure and easy way for staff to authenticate against, you know, our enterprise apps. So we've seen how the Windows 10 user interface is incredibly familiar for staff, and it makes it super easy as we use different devices throughout the day. But Windows 10 is more than just a new UI. So let's take a look at some of the enterprise features that Microsoft have built into Windows 10. And the first feature I want to talk about is Windows Update for Business. Now, Microsoft coined a new term when they released Windows 10. They came up with this Windows as a service. And the messaging that Microsoft used was for us to expect frequent feature updates to be released for this new converged Windows platform. And they said it's just the same way as software as a service applications, SaaS applications. We see lots of frequent updates for those. Expect to see the same for this new Windows platform. And in November last year, Microsoft delivered on this promise, and the Threshold 2 build of Windows 10 was released. Now, Windows Update for Business is the name that Microsoft's given to the functionality that lets businesses control the flow of updates they receive for Windows 10. Kind of helps to understand how this all sort of hangs together. So when Microsoft are working on new feature updates, the first thing they do is they release them into engineering builds. And once those new features have reached a certain quality level, they actually get deployed internally at Microsoft. So they get deployed out to tens of thousands of PCs in Microsoft. And again, once they've met certain quality benchmarks, they then get released to what's called the Insider Preview branch of Windows. This is essentially Microsoft's public beta testers. Actually, is there anybody in the room who's a Windows Insider? Cool. Hey, that's actually more than I thought. That's really cool. I was at the very bleeding edge, and I slowly worked my way back to the TELUS just before we're releasing new updates build. But you know, it's a really great way to be able to experience all of the new features and you know, participate back into the community as well, I guess. So from here, features are released to what's called the current branch of Windows. This is essentially Windows 10 Home Edition. And there's hundreds of millions of Home Edition devices out there. And only after Microsoft have released feature updates to current branch, do they then release it to current branch for business. So, you know, there's quite a few stages that these go through before they get to the business. Current branch for business includes Windows 10 Professional, Enterprise, and Education. And the November update, Threshold 2, added the ability to define what Microsoft have called distribution rings. Now, essentially, these are a way for us to control how quickly updates flow through our organization. The other really key thing that Microsoft released with Threshold 2 was the ability to pause all updates and upgrades. Now, I think that's really key because there are certain times during the year where every organization sort of hits that point where they go, you know, I've got a really major sales event on this week. I don't want updates happening. I think especially if you're running the Rugby World Cup or the Winter Olympics, there's probably that week or two where you really don't want your devices updating themselves. So with Threshold 2, we have the ability to do that now. So how do we change these settings?
But doesn't WSUS do that anyway? Because I mean, I've got Windows 10 devices and I've just plugged into WSUS and...
Absolutely.
Pushed out like
yep.
So that's something different you're talking about. Though,
that's
it?
Right. So Windows Update for Business is essentially for organizations that don't have WSUS and don't want to have the WSUS infrastructure in place.
Right.
This is everything we're talking about here, and I'll talk about the group policy settings in a minute, are all done on our Windows 10 devices. So we have no other infrastructure we have to put in place, and none of the approval process.
Right.
So yeah, absolutely. It sort of sits in that gap between putting in a WSUS server or going with CCM or some of the other technologies out there.
Right.
So, you know, Microsoft loves group policies. So to be able to configure these Windows Update for Business settings, it's a group policy object. And there's three things we can do, essentially. We can say how many months we want to delay upgrades for, how many weeks we want to delay updates for, so upgrades, new functionality, updates, security and fixes, And we can also set the pause in this in here as well. Now, these group policy settings don't affect definition updates. So if we've got Windows Defender, we're not going to pause our Windows Defender updates. They'll come through as soon as they're available. So Windows Update for Business, essentially how we control the flow of those updates. The next feature I want to talk about is Windows Store for Business. Now, Windows Store for Business was enabled for New Zealand companies 2 or 3 weeks ago, and Microsoft's not made a whole lot of noise about that yet in New Zealand. And what Windows Store for Business allows us to do is allows us to centrally manage and distribute Windows Store applications to our staff. And we can do that using our Azure AD credentials rather than having to sign up for a Microsoft account or a Microsoft Live ID, as they used to be called. Current version supports free applications in the store, and we can publish our own line of business applications. And it's on Microsoft's roadmap, it's going to be released very shortly actually, to support paid for applications in the store. So we'll be able to purchase a bulk of licenses from the store and then distribute those licenses to our staff using our business store. Now, Microsoft haven't built Windows Store for Business in isolation, so we can actually integrate Windows Store for Business with our MDM platform. And we do that using Azure Active Directory. It's a bit of a theme coming through here around Azure AD, but we'll talk about that in a few slides. When we integrate the two together, our Windows Store will then share inventory information with our MDM platform. So as a staff member downloads an application from the store, it will tell our MDM platform that this application now exists on this device. And the application catalog, which is in our MDM platform, can also be displayed in our Windows Store as well. So we get this really nice linkage between the two. The other integration that Microsoft's done is they've built DeviceGuard integration into the business store. So what's DeviceGuard? Well, DeviceGuard's a new feature in Windows 10. It allows organizations to choose which software publishers they trust to run code on their device. Yeah. So this is similar to AppLocker, but whereas AppLocker worked at an executable level, DeviceGuard looks at the code signing certificate that's used to sign that code. And it only allows applications to run that have been signed with approved code signing certificates. Now it's all a bit deep, but essentially DeviceGuard uses these things called configurable code integrity policies. You've got to love IT mouthfuls, don't you? We're going to call them CCI policies, right? And we use these policies to define the certificates that we trust. Now these policies are cryptographically signed, and it's really important. We can only replace a CCI policy with a policy which has been signed by the same key. Now that's really critical, because if I'm a local administrator on my device, I go, sweet as, I can just replace that CCI policy and I can run whatever application I want. No. The only way I can replace that CCI policy is to go to the server where I signed that policy on originally and sign a new policy that it gives me those rights to be able to run that application. So it's really important for malware as well. If I've got malware which gets administrative rights, it can't replace the policies that are currently running on my device. Now, Microsoft also integrated into the hardware to be able to achieve this as well. So DeviceGuard uses a service called, and again, this is a lovely mouthful, Hypervisor Code Integrity Service. And the Hypervisor Code Integrity Service, this uses functionality in the chipset, the virtualization components of the chipset, to essentially block kernel level code from running that isn't digitally signed and isn't allocating memory safely. So the hardware plays a part in protecting that software stance that we have. So let's have a quick look at Windows Store for Business, just seeing it's so new and seeing how easy it is to be able to put applications into our private store. So can we escape out of this? Across the desktop 3. It's not popped up. That's better. Okay, so I've logged into my Windows Store for Business. And the first thing I've done is I'm in my inventory. So I can see here the applications that I've added to my private store. And if I click into these applications, I can see who I've allocated it to. My security token hasn't timed out, which is good, so we don't need to go through MFA authentication. And we can see here that I've assigned this application to my Daniel-admin user. If I click on Daniel, I can reclaim that license back as well. So really easy to be able to see who's I've assigned applications to, and also who's downloaded applications from the store as well. So we'll just go back to my inventory. And as I scroll down, you can see here that these applications are in my private store, but the company portal's not in my private store. So I can choose to take applications out of Windows Store and assign them to staff, but not necessarily make them visible in my private store. Because if they're visible in my private store, staff can go in, they can browse for them, and they can download those applications. So I've got a few choices there around that. If I want to add an application to my store, it's really as simple as just clicking into my store. And browsing through and selecting the application that I want to add. So let's just choose something, project timeline. This is when I really hope that all of Microsoft don't try to download things off the internet at the same time. We go get app, and it's going to pop up with a couple of options for me. So I can choose to add the application to my private store, I can choose to assign it, or I can distribute it later. Essentially just secure it for me, but I'll figure out who I'm going to give it to later on. Now when you add an application to your store, it does take at the moment a couple of hours for it to appear. So if you are wanting to have a play with this, it's all right, nothing's broken. It will take an hour or two for it to process through and become available in your private store. If we go into settings, now I talked about Device Guard. So we can go in here, and if we've already running Device Guard within our organization, we can upload our current Device Guard policies into the store. But we can also download pre-made policies that will start working with the store straight away. One of the things I really like is we can invite publishers to submit applications directly into our store. So if we're working with an app developer and they've got a dev center email address, we can essentially send them an email invite and allow them to be able to submit applications directly into our store. So it makes it really easy to be able to get applications in there. I talked about integrating with our MDM platform. So it's interestingly named. It's called Management Tools. We can see in here, it's looked into my Azure Active Directory, and it said, oh, you've got Intune in your Azure Active Directory. We can integrate those two together. So I can go and activate that if I wanted. And the last one I'll just pull up in here is offline licensing. So with our application catalog and our MDM, not all of those applications are potentially licensed, what Microsoft call online. They may need a license file distributed to the app. So we can choose whether we show those applications in the store, because when a staff member downloads an application that has to be licensed offline, they may not be able to use it straight away. There's other tasks that are required. So we can choose to show those and just be aware that if a staff member downloads it, they might not be able to use it straight away, but it's there. Or we can say don't show those because the user experience is not so hot. So what does this look like from a staff member's point of view? So if I jump across to here, So when they open up the store application, they get a new option appearing at the top there. My one's bobias.co.nz. And if I click into that, and yep, I'm showing you some screenshots, but you'll get the feel. I can see all of the applications which are available in my company store. I can click on those and download them. Still get all the same search and everything else. So it's a really familiar and easy way to be able to get these applications. And the way I look at it, it's a great way to be able to say, here's a bunch of applications that generally we endorse, that you may want to use their productivity applications, but you go in and choose the ones that work for you. So, a lot of the glue that kind of makes applications on the internet be able to talk to each other is this identity control plane. And this is Azure Active Directory is really the tool that Microsoft uses to tie all of their cloud applications together. So the next thing I want to talk to you about, and Regan hinted at it, is Azure AD Join. But before I do that, how many people in the audience have had a play with Azure Active Directory? A couple. Cool. All right. So my next slide's on topic, which is good. So Azure Active Directory, it's our cloud-based identity store. And in the same way as our Active Directory is our on-premises identity store. And Microsoft's provided the capability to share identity information between our on-premises Active Directory and our Azure Active Directory. This essentially allows us to extend our on-premises identity control plane into the cloud. Now, Windows 10 takes that one step further. With Windows 10, we can join our Windows 10 device directly to Azure Active Directory. We can, in just the same way as we do an on-premise domain join with our current devices. So this is great for devices that exist outside of our network. So I think every organization has those devices that sit on the internet, but you've somehow got this sort of management oversight of them, but you don't really, because they never come into the office and they're not inside the borders of your network. So by joining Windows 10 to Azure Active Directory, any of the staff in our Azure Active Directory can log into that device. And when they log into that device, they'll get single sign-on to any of the cloud applications that we've integrated with Azure Active Directory. All that needs to happen is that PC needs to be connected to the internet. And what happens when they log in is essentially Windows 10 reaches up to Azure Active Directory and pulls down the token that's required to be able to authenticate all of the cloud applications as well. So this just works, which is, you know, one of the really fun parts. What I really like is, as part of our Azure AD join, we can force the device to be enrolled in our MDM platform. And if that MDM enrollment fails, the Azure AD join won't go ahead. So again, this extends our management reach beyond the borders of our network out over the internet. So Microsoft have significantly enhanced the MDM capabilities in Windows 10. And now both Windows 10 phone and desktops can be fully managed using an MDM platform. And Microsoft's pretty unapologetic that MDM is not a replacement for group policy objects. There are thousands of group policy objects. MDM is a different way of approaching the security. One of the key things Microsoft did with the November update for Windows 10 is to introduce MDM support into Windows 10 Home Edition. Now, what happened was Windows 10 was released, a whole lot of enthusiastic people went and bought Windows 10 devices, which were running Home Edition, brought them into the office and said, I'd like to use this as my BYOD device. And the office went, well, we can't manage that because it doesn't have any MDM support. So Microsoft listened, and with the November update, they introduced MDM capabilities into Windows 10 Home Edition. So what does that mean now? It means, now we go back to what I said at the start. We now have this one management paradigm and one security model across all of our Windows 10 devices. even those Windows 10 Home Edition devices, which are being used from a BYOD perspective. So the last two features that I want to take you through today, and I'm looking at the clock counting down, are really new. The first one I want to talk about is Enterprise State Roaming, which has just been announced by Microsoft as being in public preview. Now, essentially, Enterprise State Roaming provides the ability to be able to roam users' settings between Azure AD joined Windows 10 devices. This is similar to functionality that exists today using Microsoft Live IDs, but Enterprise State Roaming puts the control back into the organization's hands. Data is automatically encrypted using Azure Rights Management Service before it leaves the device, and it's only stored in the Azure region associated with the country code set up in our Azure Active Directory. Now, that's a lot of gobbledygook, right? What's Microsoft trying to say? When we create an Azure Active Directory, we put a country, and that country is associated with an Azure region. So Enterprise State Roaming will only store our data in the Azure region that's associated with that country. So in this case, New Zealand, that data will be stored in Australia, and only in Australia. Enterprise administrators can also see which devices staff have synchronized these settings to. And in the future, we'll be able to control which types of settings are synchronized between devices. Now, because this is a really new feature, I just want to show you really quickly how to enable it, but there's a couple of caveats. It's in preview at the moment, so you need to be running an Azure AD Premium license to be able to see the feature. And because it stores the data in the Azure AD region associated with your country, it means that Azure AD region has to have had this functionality turned on. When I tested it 3 days ago, the Australian region hadn't quite been livened up yet. So we can see where we can toggle the switch. Some of you in different regions may be able to enable it. But I want to show you so that in the next 2 or 3 weeks when it comes live, you can turn it on and have a bit of a play. Because for staff, again, those Azure AD joined devices outside of your organization, being able to roam those settings, this makes things much easier for them. Right, let's click out of here. Go back to here. Hopefully this one hasn't timed out. So I've logged into manage.windowsazure.com. So this is the old Azure portal. Everybody should be using the new portal, but we need to check this with an Azure Active Directory, which is only available at the moment in the old portal. So I've gone into configure, and if we scroll down, we get to our devices section. And we get this new setting here. Users may sync settings and enterprise data. So we can choose to enable this for all staff, or what I like to suggest is enable it for a couple of staff and test it out first of all. Get comfortable with it yourself before you open it up to everybody. Now I'm not going to turn that on because it will just bring up a bit of an error message for me, but this is where you go to be able to enable it and have a bit of a play. So, let's jump back. Right, the final feature I want to introduce you to is Enterprise Data Protection. Now, Enterprise Data Protection's scheduled for release later this year, so it's not quite here yet. And it's going to provide the ability to be able to selectively encrypt and protect corporate data that's stored on our Windows 10 devices. So this is really, really key, because it's going to work at a file level, not at a volume level. So there's a couple of things that this means. One, if a staff member picks a file up off their device and puts it onto removable media, or emails it, or uploads it to cloud storage, which is actually the most likely, the file stays protected because the file's encrypted, not the volume that it's sitting on. The other thing is, we can separate our corporate data and our staff members' personal data. The moment if a staff member brings a device and we want to protect our corporate data, we need to encrypt their device. We need to BitLocker it. We end up encrypting their files as well, and we have all these fun things when a startup wants their device back, we have to decrypt that, or do we decrypt that? And you've removed the key, and now my data's gone as well. This cuts through all of that and just says, no, we're protecting our data. You can do what you want with yours. That's no probs at all. Microsoft have also announced that Enterprise Data Protection will incorporate rights management functionality. So we'll be able to essentially state policy as to whether our staff can copy information in and out of those files and to what other applications. So I'm really quite looking forward to this feature. I think it's going to be really quite exciting. So, looking at the clock, to sum up, click through this. What I've shown you today is how Windows 10 empowers greater productivity with a familiar user experience and features that support the modern way we're working across multiple devices in multiple locations using multiple applications. And for those of you that have not upgraded to Windows 10, my call to action is upgrade to Windows 10 today. What's stopping you?